Thank you, John. And thank you to ASRI for inviting me along to give this talk this morning. I'm going to be talking on my favourite subject, small satellites, and some of the work that we've been achieving through the Cooperative Research Centre for Satellite Systems. We're on. In the talks this morning, I've heard various references to cooperating with Japan, vibration analyses, etc., and I'd like to just touch on some of those topics as I go through this talk. And of course, launch and launch services. And as Brian noted, tomorrow, fortnight, our satellite is launched. So it's getting to be a pretty exciting time for all of us. I'm going to talk about now, where we are, what we've achieved, and I'd like your input to the second part of this talk, and that is future missions. I've got some ideas, a lot of other people have ideas, and I'm working to some parameters that can constrain those ideas as to what and where we should go next. So I'll talk about the CRC quickly, current status of FedSat, follow-on mission planning, and I threw at the end this International Space Advisory Group business that's been hanging around in the ether for a year or two. Ian's been participating, and others, Michael, in this group. But if I don't get to it, it's not terribly important. Satellite technologies, not space technologies, satellite technologies. We're an expert user of satellite services in this country, but we're not generally regarded globally as a provider of technology. And that's where I would like to see things change, and I believe that's where things are changing in the perception of what Australia has to offer that international market. My vision is in the area of small satellites. They create opportunities because they represent affordable access to space. You don't have to have a NASA program to build the kind of satellites we're building. In fact, NASA couldn't do it, and they've demonstrated that many, many times. It would cost NASA, ESA, NASDA, whoever gets involved, any of these big agencies, it would cost them more to set up the administration for a project like this than we've actually spent on building the satellite. And so we bring no baggage into this era of small satellite technologies. We're right there being able to design the systems to back that kind of development in Australia. They don't have to be limited in their capacity the way they used to be. Small satellite systems are highly efficient, effective, and can contain latest technologies to provide many, many of the services that were previously relied on larger satellites to provide, to supply. For example, TopSat project in the UK with Kinetic, RAL, Surrey, British National Space Centre. It's something like a £10 million, if I'm right, project, including a camera with 2-metre panchromatic resolution in a small satellite of about 150 kilograms. So the technology is getting packed into relatively small packages these days. But most importantly of all, small satellites are within our capabilities, within our university, industry, and research organisations' capabilities to produce. And I believe, as Australians, we should be designing space systems to meet our own requirements in this country. We shouldn't be relying on buying services, borrowing services from other nation satellites solely to meet our requirements. And I'll come to future mission planning ideas in that area too, because there are some requirements that meet law and order enforcement, national security, where we need assured access to services from space. And of course, we benefit as technology providers through international cooperation. Fundamental to this game, I believe, is international cooperation. So the CRC for Satellite Systems has set out to expand user demands for satellite services. I don't need to tell this community, but as Australians, we rely every day of our lives on services from space, from satellites. Industry, research organisations and universities in our centre are actually leading and participating in space projects. For example, FedSat is an international project, an international mission led and managed by Australia. And very importantly, integrating education and training opportunities. In fact, I noted the theme for your meeting is advancing space technology through education, and that's very, very close to the objectives and our own performance criteria within the centre. And we want to apply those skills to design, construction and operation of space systems, and of course through follow-on mission planning retain those skills for the benefit of the industry and the research organisations that are working with us. In the centre we have four research programmes. We call one Space Science. It's led by Professor Brian Fraser at the University of Newcastle, and essentially they investigate space weather phenomenon in the magnetosphere, ionosphere, etc. Satellite communications is headquartered here in Adelaide, led by Professor Bill Cowley at the University of South Australia, but includes CSIRO in Sydney, University of Technology, Sydney, D-Space Proprietary Limited here, CODAN, and I think that's about it. Satellite Systems is led by Professor Miles Moody at Queensland University of Technology, and there they are responsible for the GPS R&D and the high-performance computing developments an instrument of which type we'll be carrying on FedSat. Satellite Engineering, I've added that as a research program. It has evolved into a research program. It wasn't initially planned that way, but it's led by Mirek Vesely, who's the manager of VIPAC's Adelaide office. And Mirek's been project manager for FedSat for the last 2 years. And I'll come to that, more of that later. In terms of the education opportunities, we've got postgraduate students. We've already graduated a number of students. More students will graduate by the end of this year. Co-supervision is important, industry and academia, co-supervising our students. Our target is 50 degree higher students, and of course we attract good people through supplementing the scholarship stipends. I talked about international cooperation, absolutely essential. As we have learned, it's broadened our available skill base. It's given us access to technology that we didn't care or wish or want to develop in this country, but that we needed to integrate for the total system. Extends applications. For example, the communications payload on FedSat is going to be flown by KAIST-SAT-4 in Korea and by XSAT from Singapore, and they're building up their own user communities for our technology through FedSat. And of course expanding opportunities for education and training. We've had a number of overseas students come and work on FedSat through our education program, and more are applying as I speak, as well as our students getting experience overseas. And of course we want to reduce the risk, increase the affordability. In FedSat terms, that's meant that a $20 million project has probably cost us less than 3/4 of that, with more than $5 million worth of investment being made in the project by overseas organisations. Some examples: NASDA is actually providing us with the launch service in exchange for research data from the payloads, from two payloads in particular. NASA has supplied the navigation instrument. NASA actually also funded Johns Hopkins University partly for the development of the adaptive instrument module, or so-called high-performance computer. University of California, Los Angeles has worked together with the University of Newcastle and put a lot of resources into building the onboard payload magnetometer, not the onboard magnetometer. That's a separate one altogether. British National Space Centre, they've provided funds to facilitate contract work through Surrey Satellite Technology Limited, in particular laying down the solar panels, the solar cells on the panels. And the Canadian Space Agency invested about $500,000 in FedSat through providing momentum wheel technology and control electronics and software.